Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Places, people, places.
Have no place to go. Have no place to go.
Happy 200 days, President Trump. 200 days in office today. We're still here. It's 6:13. We'll do the top six at six in a second. Andrea, how was your weekend?
It was very good. Worked at the TV station, covered a pep parade Saturday, and made
did the
Chicago
owners
market
know there
Sunday.
Was a parade?
Yes, they did. Okay. They were all there. There was even a contest for the pet and the owner who looked the most alike.
Who won?
I don't know.
Dogs. Got to be dogs.
The pug, yeah.
So you had a flat-faced human with a flat-faced dog?
Yes, very similar. Yes, they looked... Isn't it funny how owners tend to look like their dogs?
Well, as time goes on, I think we all tend to morph into pets.
I think what? So. Huh?
Good, yeah. Dave, what'd you do?
It was busy. I worked at the TV station also.
Oh, did you two see each other?
We didn't. I saw Andrea's makeup drawer. Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah, and, that's not there yet.
Mm-hmm. And let's see. And we had a lot of stuff going on. How about you, Steve? How was your weekend?
Yes, there's never any time for me. Mary, how was your weekend?
Oh, come on. Oh, my.
I played in a golf tournament. Thanks for asking.
Oh, both days?
Yes, as a matter of fact, both days.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I had an interesting 21st. My son had his 21st birthday celebration.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes. It was actually last week, but it continues.
Congratulations. Why does it continue?
Well, we kind of had a family friend bar crawl. That was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm.
This is something that I never had to deal with my kids because...
Because they didn't drink.
Yeah. Well, but Dave, have you gone through this with your kids? Amy Cochran will drink, sangria or something crazy like that. On occasion, she likes a glass of wine. But I've never had that occasion that I know male friends of mine have had where they go out with their son and they just hammered.
Yeah.
They not get hammered, but they just hit it hard.
No. I mean, maybe a few beers, but not.
Come on.
I don't ever remember my father, ever doing that with
my
mother.
My father drank heavily with me, but it was only so I could drive home.
Right.
And I was 7 or 8 at the time. But Mary, were you out drinking with your son
with your son? Well, yeah, casual drink, okay. Of course. And we started with my family at the house. We had pizza. We got all ready to go. And this is...
Liquored up.
He wanted... His girlfriend had a birthday the same week. Mm-hmm. She turned 21. So they kind of did a combo thing. And we had a great time. It was really fun. We walked everywhere because we could. And
because you should have.
Right. And we should, and we did. And it was fun. And, I saw a few people. It was like in my hometown. So it was a little... odd, but
how awkward would it be if Mary appeared on her own traffic report?
If
she had to come in on a Monday was a major traffic incident and she was the cause.
Right.
You know what they say? A family,
that would be ironic.
A family that boozes together stays together.
I don't know. Is that an old saying?
It is. It is.
I don't know about that.
Must be one of those downstate sayings that we're not familiar with.
Yeah. Moonshine. A family that moonshines together stays together.
God. Didn't moonshine.
I was worried about Mike Jacobson this weekend because for the first weekend in the entire summer, he didn't have a wedding to go to with Audrey. Did you just cry yourself to sleep both nights?
That was Friday. Okay. Saturday, we saw Dr. Johnson, and it was a little bit better. Slept a little bit better.
Did you have chicken?
I had steak, actually.
Oh. Okay.
Did you make it at your house?
Wasn't as good. Yeah, wasn't as good.
Yeah. Did you dress up, like, in a suit that you didn't need to?
And then I spilled on it. That was the worst part. So now I got to go to the cleaners.
Here's the weird part. Jake texted me over the weekend. He actually had a table, and he invited strangers over to sit with him, and they had awkward conversation just to increase the wedding vibe that
you
would have all summer long.
There you go. Do a little hokey pokey.
Jim actually ended up being a pretty nice guy.
Oh, did he? Well, good.
I mean, a little rough around the edges, but you get a few in him, and he started talking a little bit.
Nice to make new friends. What about you, Sandberg? Good times? All right. Thumbs up. 6:16. We're going to do the top six at six. Doc Moe's coming up. I guess you guys don't care what I did this weekend.
I asked you already.
You said
there's no time
tournament.
For it.
Yeah, we're out of time. No time.
How'd you do in the golf tournament?
That's all right. I qualified for the club championship. Oh. That's really
there you go. Well, that's nice.
Congratulations.
Awesome. Yeah, it's just kind of whatever. 85.
Did you get a trophy?
85. 85. That's fantastic. 84 or whatever. It's a great score.
Hawk Harrelson hates the Cubs.
Yeah.
Wow, that's not really a surprise. He's never really hidden that fact.
Yeah, but he says he's never, ever going back to Wrigley.
No, it's over.
Yeah. I wonder if anyone at Wrigley's concerned about the fact that he's never, ever.
I think people are still
going
to show up there. But yeah, he said it's the worst press box and the worst TV booth in baseball. Okay. We've always heard it's the worst visitor's clubhouse, which is true.
Then don't go.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. It's a beautiful day in Hawk's neighborhood. You know what's funny is I never asked Pinella about this. Pinella and Hawk are really good pals.
Very close.
Really good pals.
Very close.
But Lou is lovably cranky.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that Hawk has ever been lovable.
I have to tell you, based on what I saw online, too, the fans really don't care to have him back either. All the responses to his to him on Twitter were just all negative.
Yeah. He's a good marketer. He's a good marketer of his own brand, mm-hmm. even though those are terms he wouldn't use. And I guarantee that there was at least a little twinkle in his eye when he started this fight up again.
Well, see, it's different than when Ozzie Guillen talked about the rats at Wrigley. Mm. Remember that? I mean, then Cubs fans were kind of laughing.
Well, at that point, the rats couldn't hit. You know, if the rats had any bat at all, it would have been good.
Now they all have championship rings.
You know, I had a Sox fan, out-of-state Sox fan, bring this up this weekend. Why won't the Sox ever consider bringing Ozzie back? Just remind people, that's a Jerry Ozzie thing, that's a management Ozzie thing, correct?
Why?
The Kenny Williams Ozzie thing.
Yeah, maybe more to the point.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's do the top six.
Dadgummit!
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the Top 6 at 6. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Let's do it. Item number one, billionaire entrepreneur and investor J.B. Pritzker pumped another $7 million into his self-funded campaign for the Democratic nomination for governor. So far, Pritzker has put all $21.2 million into his race for the nomination. I salute Pritzker for doing that. I would also just have you do the math on his wealth compared to $21 million. So let's say the average family in Chicago makes, what did we determine, $60,000?
Yeah, I think it was a little less than that, actually.
Yeah, so this would be the equivalent of the family making $60,000, say, put in $4.27.
No kidding, right?
He's got a lot of money. But he doesn't have to self-fund his campaign completely. There are donors you could chase down. This is an effort to show that he's not beholden to anyone.
Yeah, right. It's the most money spent by a Democratic candidate on himself in a primary.
During the Obama administration, the Interior Department, citing climate change, banned new coal leases on land owned by the federal government. President Trump is encouraging more mining on public lands, part of a push to invigorate a struggling industry and create wealth and jobs. Here's the problem with that. The problem with that is the coal miners who own the mines, they get a vote, and they have to bet on the future and whether or not coal is going to be a viable energy alternative, not because the president says it is, or not because the president wants it to be, or not because the president needs a political win, but because it actually is. And the people that own the coal mine seem to be understanding that, well, they have a giant coal mine they need to get coal out of. Mechanization is going to take more and more jobs going forward, and eventually some sort of transfer into something the coal mines might be more useful for.
Just so you know, there are more people that work at Arby's than work in coal mines in the U.S.
Have you been to Arby's? It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Next. Mike Pence is saying, what? How dare you, New York Times?
How
dare you say that I would run in 2020? How dare you say I'm running a shadow campaign? How dare you say I have a PAC that's raised more money than the president has? Oh, in fact, he does.
Right. Methinks one does protest too much.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
To quote Shakespeare.
And here's the thing. Why would you deny it? Just say, listen, this is something that is done. It's a regular part of the political landscape. Instead of, throwing a tantrum and saying, oh, how dare you? How stupid do we look?
No kidding.
Who amongst us thinks that you shouldn't be ready if you're second for 2020? It doesn't mean you're going to stab the president in the back. It doesn't mean that you're being disloyal.
We're still talking about Biden, and he decided not to run.
As a matter of fact, I would say the responsible thing for Mike Pence to do, if you believe in Mike Pence or you believe in the Republican Party, would be for Mike Pence to do exactly what he's doing.
Absolutely. And then did you hear Kellyanne Conway? I don't know why they trolled Kellyanne Conway out on all the Sunday shows denying this emphatically, saying, oh, he's loyal to the president. What does one have to do with the other? You can be completely loyal and say, okay, when he's done in, say, 8 years, I'm going to run.
I think at this point there's no one that can tell the truth in Washington.
Republican,
agreed. Democrat, or otherwise. Now, you mentioned Vice President Biden, who I'm a fan of, but Vice President Biden should not run, and here's why he should not run. And I apologize if you've reached this age, because 80 ain't what it used to be.
Right.
75 ain't what it used to be. But the stress and strain of being president of the United States could use a little youth. 71 is a tremendous toll. This is not a shot at Trump, but everyone who knows him from the inside sees that, you know, he's not eating right. But on top of that, he has already aged dramatically in 6 months. So the idea that you can now take 75 and 80-year-olds and put them in charge and that's not going to be some sort of issue is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, John McCain, when he ran, at 69, we're going, oh, my God, we can't elect that guy. He's a kid.
Yeah, no, you have to take everything
at 69.
At that age, absolutely.
So, Vice President Biden, how old's Pence? Pence is like 50. Is he 60 yet?
Let me check.
Yeah, look that up.
Pence is, okay.
But the Democrats don't have anyone under, say, I don't know, 100. And the Republicans as well. As a matter of fact, I'm not kidding about that with the Democrats. There are leading Democrats who are insisting Bernie Sanders should run again.
Right? 58 he is.
I don't know. I heard over the weekend that the Cory Booker and there were a couple of other Democratic names mentioned. They were kind of young. They weren't old.
What?
Isn't Cory Booker like in his 40s or 50s?
Cory Booker, yeah, but you said a couple others. Who are the others?
I want to say it's the other. I can see
Doogie Howser. Doogie Howser's a Democrat.
I can see his face, but I can't think of the name. He may have been like somebody from Louisiana.
I don't know. I don't know.
I can't.
Ben Sass would be the youngest Republican who I believe is in his early to mid 40s, something like that. The senator, he's one that's out there as well. But, you know, honestly, who wants to talk about 2020?
No, I know.
How about we talk about 20 days from now when the president goes back to work? Next. Northwestern University professor Wyndham Latham turned himself in Friday at the Oakland Federal Building in California and allegedly revealed where his cohort in murder was, and that was over in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
He was also arrested without incident, I'm told?
Yes, he turned himself in, and the Oxford professor did as well, the finance officer.
They're both
expected to appear in court today.
Are they back here yet?
Not yet,
okay.
but their lawyers are saying they're going to waive extradition.
There is a video that supposedly the professor sent to family members saying it's the worst mistake he ever made. Yeah, probably.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, murdering someone, that's crazy. Right up there.
This story is bizarre from the very beginning. After this happened, when they, as they were going on the lam, they stopped off at a library.
I like
on
when
the
you say
side.
Going on the lam. You sound like an old cop.
I know. I'm sorry. When they started to, leave the area, flee.
Yeah.
They made a donation to a library in the victim's name.
Well, that's
and then proceeded to drive west.
Well, that should get them into heaven. That should clear that whole thing.
It's just bizarre.
It is very bizarre. Next. If you miss shirtless photos of an old guy, shirtless photos of Vladimir Putin have appeared in Russian media. He was on a short holiday. Those photos surfaced over the weekend where he was seen hiking, camping, and fishing without his shirt on. I just, you know. Listen, God bless the people of Russia. You get a lot of problems, and now you got a leader who wants to take his shirt off because he thinks he looks fabulous. And by the way, for his age, looks great.
He was spearfishing too.
I can have a rule about that, unless you're me. This is just again my opinion. I don't think most women want to see that, unless you're say completely buff, have Brad Pitt abs. Yeah,
I think that's fair. Yeah, and finally, this exciting news. For those of you looking forward to Jay Cutler in the broadcast booth, Dave, that's going to have to wait. Let's go live to Miami where Jay Cutler is the story and Dave is standing outside a club he spent the night at. What is the story on Jay Cutler?
Actually standing along Key Biscayne, Steve, this morning. Beautiful morning here in Miami. Yes,
okay. And
the entire key.
Okay.
And Jay Cutler is going to quarterback the Miami Dolphins. He agreed to a one-year deal, $10 million. and another $3 million in incentives. He's going to be the starting quarterback with the injury to Ryan Tannehill. And the biggest factor in this was the presence of Adam Gase as the head coach of the Dolphins, because there's a familiarity there and obviously a comfort level between he and Cutler. So Cutler's back in business with the Dolphins.
Bears play Miami?
Bears did not play Miami, which would have really
been
interesting.
That'd be fun.
I mean, it would have been perfect if it was the opener.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not happening.
I don't wish any ill will to Jay Cutler. As a matter of fact, this is a good test on whether or not Cutler was the problem.
That's a good point.
Let's see what happens.
Good point. Well, he had his best year from a quarterback rating standpoint under Gase in 2015. And he also kind of changed his demeanor when he was playing for Gase. So we'll see if that holds in Miami.
Any deals for Rex Grossman out there?
Not that I've heard of. Mm-hmm. No.
Bobby Douglas?
No, nor Colin Kaepernick.
Okay. Yeah, Colin Kaepernick still unemployed.
He's still out there. Yeah.
Huh.
Which is weird. Reporting live from Key Biscayne, Florida.
Dave and outside Ennett, the birdcage.
And outside the birdcage. What's the birdcage?
That's the club you're at.
Oh, that's the club.
Yeah.
Dave Ennett, WGN Sports.
Top 6 brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men, and the big story is next.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine.
I've got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now.
They are making people better by making medicine better.
He's from Central DuPage Hospital. Call Dr. Moose right now.
Good morning, Doc. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How about yourself?
Nice to hear. What'd you do this weekend? Anything fun?
I did. You know, I got to play golf with my Uncle Pat from North Carolina, was in town, which is always a treat because he's just a phenomenally great guy and nice guy. And we did something special this time. We brought your favorite most. We brought Denise out to act as our, I wouldn't say she caddied, but she drove one of the carts. So it was interesting.
Did your sister ever play golf?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yep. She did.
Yeah, but, you know, Sunday morning at Butterfield, women aren't allowed to play. They don't get to play till a little bit later. So
yeah, Andrea loves that rule.
I do, but I do love Butterfield. It's one of my favorite courses. It's beautiful.
You know, Doc was a caddy at Butterfield and eventually became an Evans Scholar.
My my cousin Bobby was a caddy at Butterfield and became an Evans Scholar too.
How about that?
Doc Most, you know, we can thank Doc Most for guiding him as well.
And I believe Doc has a brother named Brad, who you may have met, the Brad Sheep of the family. And he also, am I right, Doc? Wasn't he at Evans Scholar?
He was, yeah. So for two of the four boys to get Evans Scholarships, we're very fortunate. And Western Golf's been very good to us.
Yeah, well, they're a great organization, without a
doubt. They are.
Yeah. There is a Fox News anchor named Eric Bolling who has been suspended for inappropriate comments and actions with women. Is there a medical term for that at Fox now? Is there some sort of condition sweeping the men at Fox? Is it an acute perversion of some kind? Inappropriate conductitis? Is there a medical thing going on there?
I don't know the medical term, so I'd have to chase that one down.
All right, so we'll have to do some research.
It's only limited to Fox, so it'd be a very small study. So.
I understand it may not hold the test of time.
Yeah.
All right, so look, summer is waning. I don't like to even have talk of summer going away, but realistically, we got 8 great weeks, I would say, before trouble starts. And for those of you who participate in activities outside and you're heating up, these are the dog days of summer, and some of us are older than others, and we could get hurt and kill ourselves. Okay, maybe that's a dramatic leap, but we could hurt ourselves.
Absolutely. You know, and you really want to make sure you maximize the time because, like you said, you know, Chicago only has a limited time of outdoor activity. So we want to make sure that we kind of don't overdo things, make sure that we kind of make sure we can get through the end of the year without injuries so that we're not missing those final 8 weeks or 10 weeks on the sidelines from any activities we appreciate.
So I would assume what you're going to suggest is spend as much money as you can on late night TV gimmicks. That's the way to health, isn't it?
You know, it is kind of amazing because once you have an injury, your goal is to get back. You go, I just want to get back to playing golf, to running, to doing whatever. And now I see something on late night TV and it says, oh my gosh, it's this plus this, therefore it must be better. I am going to spend my money on that.
And right.
We really should be careful about those things because a lot of them are unfounded. You know, the copper and the Tommy Copper that you probably have seen. Brett Favre is one of the people that promoted as well as other athletes.
Yeah, I've got some of those if you need one.
Yeah.
I can just mail them to you.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, people look at it and the claims that they make are true about the compression portion of it, but the additional monies that you're paying for the copper portion of it really do not carry much weight. And actually, science has proven that they really add little value, if any value at all. And the value that they add actually is to kill bacteria, not to make your pain go away.
So the extra money you're paying is obviously ludicrous. That's the Tommy Copper. And again, this is based on medicine. It's not some attack on Tommy Copper. It's just a generalization about all the companies that sell copper-related products, which I would assume include the bracelets, right?
Absolutely. Yep. The bracelets. And you know, that was a big fad 10, 15 years ago.
Got a couple of those, too. I'll throw it in for a limited time on my Tommy Coppers that I'll send you.
Yeah, people, their arms used to get blue from it, and we get plenty of copper. If you eat a good balanced diet, you get enough copper that your body needs. It's in meats, it's in seafood, it's in nuts, it's in grains. The body will get plenty of copper. We do not need to supplement copper into our body by using this equipment or any other topical.
All right, so let's talk about the compression for a second, because certainly wearing a knee brace is not a bad call if your knees are troubling you or whatever other sort of compression would be appropriate. But how do we know it's too tight or too loose?
Yeah, that, you know, and it is a good point. You know, compression is good. There's two things that it does that are really good. One, it gives us some support, and two, it keeps down inflammation. The bad thing is it sometimes gives us this overconfidence of support, which really isn't there. But more importantly is what you said, is that the fit is so important. Too loose, it adds no value at all. Too tight, it can cut off the circulation and really can actually do more damage. So again, buying something online, be extremely careful about the sizing of it versus going to either a medical supply store or a local sporting goods store where you can try it on to make sure that it's not too tight but not too loose. So you want it to feel snug, but you don't want it to feel like, wow, my foot's getting numb here,
right,
because of the decrease in the circulation.
Andrea has brought up tennis elbow a few times. I wanted to get to that, but first, give us a little lesson on anatomy. Okay.
Yeah.
What is a ligament?
Exactly. So let's talk about that, because when people get injuries, they'll use different terms, you know, and we want to make sure that we understand what's a ligament and what's a tendon. So a ligament is essentially, if you think about it, if you ever looked at an X-ray and you go, wow, how do the bones in my hand or foot, how do they stay there? And it's because we have ligaments, which is essentially, to make things simple, fiberglass that lies and connects both of those bones. So ligaments support bones, and ligaments hold bones in place. Tendons, on the other hand, connect to muscles and connect to bones, so that when the muscle contracts, the tendon pulls on the tendon to have motion. So when we talk about strains and sprains, we're talking about ligaments versus tendons.
So that's why when you go to a restaurant, you can't get chicken ligaments, but you can get all the chicken tendons you want.
Tenders.
Oh, that's different. I'm sorry. What were you going to bring up?
Well, that's what I wanted to bring up. We were talking a little bit about this off the air last year. I was at a family party, and a friend of mine, we were playing the beanbag game, and she said, oh, I have tennis elbow. I can barely lift up the beanbag. I said, oh, do you play a lot of tennis? And she said, oh, no, that's just what it's called. Another friend chimed in, same party. She said, oh, I have that. It's extremely painful. But go back to the compressions, doc. That's where she said, oh, I'm wearing this band and I'm making it as tight as possible. And I said, that doesn't sound safe or even, it sounds completely painful. So I guess, how do you diagnose it? Why is it called tennis elbow if you don't play tennis? And what's the cure?
Yeah, it's interesting. So we have a bone in our humerus bone, which is, wait for Steve to say something funny.
No, it's not funny. There's nothing funny about the humerus bone.
Right. So that's your bone in your upper arm where your biceps and triceps are. If you reach under your elbow right now, hold your arm straight out, you'll find two bony one bony prominence on each side. That's mm-hmm. called the epicondyle. Mm-hmm. The epicondyle is very important because it allows us to rotate our hand, because the elbow is fascinating as far as if you think of what movements you can do with your elbow. And it's all because of what happens at the epicondyle. So what happens in tennis elbow and golfer's elbow is that epicondyle gets inflamed. And it gets inflamed to a point where, like Andrea said, someone couldn't pick up a bean bag. But yet they could if they used their biceps more to lift. They could lift a 30-pound bag of ice. So it's really kind of strange as far as the intensity of this illness because of the discomfort with any movement.
So it's the mechanics. It's as much as the injury or not so much?
It's actually more, yeah. It's the mechanics and as well as it's physics. So from the mechanics of it, once that gets inflamed at that point on the bone, any movement there is the body's going to say, stop this, do not do it, we're not going to do more damage, and you get pain and perceived weakness. The muscle's not weak at all, but it's this perceived weakness. I'm so weak I can't even pick it up. But that's the body's way of protecting further damage.
So is there a cure, though? I mean, I know some people get a shot, or but that's a quick fix, right?
Yeah, some people get a shot of cortisone. And like you said, you've probably seen people wear that tennis brace. And that tennis brace is put on the forearm just a little bit, a couple inches down from the elbow towards the hand. And does that help? It helps a little bit. And the science behind that is physics, where if it's tight enough, it's going to change the point of impact on the bone, on that epicondyle, and take off some of the area where it's inflamed, and you might do a little bit better. To be honest with you, they really don't work that well from a treatment point of view. They work much better from a prevention point of view because they also will muffle some of the impact. They'll take some of that impact and kind of deaden it.
Well, some of the frustration, though, right? The frustration is because, and Bill Leff is going through this with a leg injury, but you spoke to it earlier, you want to get back to what you do. Like, if I couldn't play golf all summer, I'd lose my mind. If you couldn't play golf, you'd probably lose your mind. But Bill can't play tennis right now, so that's why his wife has left him. You know, it's just the thing you do that you love to do, and as you get older, there's less and less of those things. You really want to be able to do it, so that's why you got to pay attention to this stuff. And frankly, we're just getting started. We got more with Doc coming up in a second. Dr. Kevin Most is on the line, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. We're talking about essentially sports injuries, but basically activity-related injuries with good weather. And maximizing these last 8 weeks or 10 weeks of summer before the weather gets cold again. All right, yeah. So...
Hey, let's go back to golf for a second.
All right, feel free.
Yeah, so one thing about golf, and this is for you to listen, Steve.
Here we go, a lecture from the doctor.
There are most courses have something called a driving range. Mm. And you get to the driving range 20 minutes, 30 minutes before your tee time.
Right.
Before your tee time, yes.
If you've watched professionals warm up, you'll see that the first club they take out of their bag is wedges, and they hit about 10 yards, 15
right.
yards, 20 yards, and then they slowly work their way up. They don't hit long irons and they don't hit drivers until their bodies have stretched essentially and they've warmed up. And the reason I say it for you is because you're the guy that when we want to tee off at 7:30, we tell you the tee time is 7 so that we know you'll be there by 7:30.
I show up at 7:25 and I'm proud of myself because I'm 5 minutes early.
That's a good point. Yeah. No, but the importance of stretching, even with tennis players you watch, they don't go straight to serves when they're warming up. They're hitting it lightly, and again, it's just that warm-up. Just like we tell people to stretch before they run, to stretch before all this, it's the warm-up versus going and trying to go full bore right out of the box.
All right, we talked a little bit about the treatment of it. Stretching and warming up is important, but let me go to the back for a second because back injuries are a big deal. You've had a chronic back issue.
Yep.
Certainly some people have had success with back surgeries, but I think most medical professionals would agree back surgery is not a guarantee of a fix. And you look at a guy like Tiger Woods with access to the best medical folks in the world and the money to pay for it. And he has had chronic back problems. So I've got a low right disc issue, and it seems to be, you know, more prevalent than ever. What do people with bad backs do to avoid having to even consider surgery?
Yeah. The first thing I would say is if you have a back injury, you are one of about 99% of the world. Everyone is going to have a back injury. If you go to a back surgeon and he wants to do surgery right away, go to another back surgeon. The back surgeons right now you will see are not rushing to surgery because of exactly what you said. That's a last resort. We're going to work with physical therapy. We're going to work on strengthening your core. And in the acute portion of it, we're going to treat you with steroids, whether they're oral steroids or potentially a shot, anti-inflammatories, and teach you better body mechanics. You know, people think, oh, sitting is probably the best thing I can do for your back. And actually, it's the worst thing you can do for your back. It loads more onto your lower back than it does when you're standing. That's why you're seeing the popularity of stand-up desks right now. Decreases the amount of pressure put on that low back. So get up and move around and stretch for sure. And then again, it's the treatment of anti-inflammatories, ice afterwards, and really working on strengthening your core, which takes a lot of pressure off your low back.
And a lot of this is rest, ice, elevation, and stress relief in general, and waiting it out to some degree, though we know that most of us won't do that.
Right.
Like these notes that you put up every week are increasingly more valuable, and this is a big one. We didn't get a chance to get to how comfortable your shoes are and how to pick the right shoes. This is also in this. These notes will be posted very quickly here. You'll be able to access them through what? The Steve Cochran Show page? It's my first day. Is that it? Is that where we go, Mike?
WGNradio.com/Steve Cochran.
All right, Doc. Thanks for the help, as always.
You got it, man. We'll talk to you guys soon.
See ya. That's Dr. Kevin Most. He wrote a book on this stuff.
The best. Absolute best.
It's amazing. Meanwhile, I continue to risk injury sitting here and talking to you people, but I do it for you, not for me. Quick break. We're back with the news next, and then we're going to talk about our fine state and what a mess it is. Coming up on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
It's 7:16 as we continue live from the Allstate Showcase Studio with show number 961 in studio now. Is our new best friend. And Adam Agiewski, by the way, it took me all weekend to learn how to pronounce your name, because last time when you were on, I mispronounced it every time I brought it up. But Adam wrote a piece for Forbes. This is part of OpenTheBooks.com, where people can go and see essentially all the public information available on the way money is being spent and, in my opinion, mismanaged. And so much of it, Adam, as you point out, comes down to overtime.
That's right. Well, our mission at OpenTheBooks.com is to post every dime taxed and spent at every level of government in the entire country online. It's specific to Illinois. We post nearly every single public employee's salary and pension at every level of Illinois government, including the federally based employees that are based in Illinois. Specific to Chicago, what we just found was that Rahm Emanuel is building a brand new patronage army. I think it's one of the biggest stories in the state right now, and specifically to Chicago. And this issue of pay and pensions affects the delivery of every single city service, whether it's police and fire, public safety, education. Every single service is affected by the level of excessive overtime and pay.
Government should not be a place where people go to get rich. However, everywhere I look in your report, there are not five, not ten. There are dozens and dozens of six-figure jobs in the city of Chicago and in the state. How is that possible?
I just don't know. I don't know how the city can pay a plumber $161,000 and sewer bricklayers up to $134,000 and construction laborers up to $138,000. Truck drivers up to $134,000.
And by the way, we would be the first to defend cops and firemen because we should.
Of course.
But cop and fire OT and ambulance OT and first responder OT appears to be out of control as well.
So in total last year, the city spent nearly $300 million on overtime, which goes to a management issue with Rahm Emanuel. So my piece at Forbes today, and everybody in your listening audience could just Google Rahm Emanuel, Forbes, and pull up the piece. We question whether Rahm Emanuel can manage the city of Chicago with $300 million worth of overtime. To put that in perspective, 13 members of the Chicago Fire Department out-earned the commander at the fire department. There was police and fire doubling their salaries in the dispatch unit. All of these findings point to systemic waste of resources and systemic mismanagement.
Andre, you and I have talked about this.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The way to manage overtime is to have enough staff so you don't need so much overtime, and to manage that staff in those hours appropriately. Now, granted, you're going to get spikes in police and fire where you need to cover it, and to fight the murder issue in this city, you're going to need some overtime. But overtime, it's almost like CEO pay now. It's like, we'll pay a CEO $200,000 or $300,000, but oh, we'll give him $6 million in a bonus. The overtime has become the bonus for city employees in particular, and it's got to stop.
Well, there was 1,000 city employees last year, as you know, Steve, that made more than $40,000 each in overtime. And let's go through just some of them. Here are some in the police and fire departments. 10 hardworking City of Chicago police officers made $1.2 million in overtime. It was $124,000 a piece in overtime, and they were working 80 to 85-hour work weeks, we estimate. There was 4,800 police officers assigned as detectives that made between $10,000 and $127,000 worth of OT last year, trying to solve the city's hundreds of homicides and thousands of shootings. And sadly, 71% of the homicides were not solved. That means the killer got away with murder.
Right. Listen, a lot to cover here. I want you to jump in on this right after we take care of traffic when we come back. But also this patronage thing, because that's not a light charge to throw out. I want you to be able to back that up and talk about it in just a second. You heard me talk about timeshare exit team for a while now, and perhaps you've seen the other copycat companies jumping into the same space. Well, listen, the reason I continue to talk about Timeshare Exit Team is pretty simple. I haven't seen anybody else do it better. They are thoughtful and considerate with their process. They sit down with you. They look at your unbreakable timeshare contract, and they help you end the relationship with the timeshare that, frankly, it's a lot like a divorce. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Every case is unique. So if any other company out there says there's a silver bullet or a quick and easy process, just turn away, run away as fast as you can. Timeshare Exit Team is the only timeshare relief company that has a national footprint and a local presence where they meet you face-to-face in an actual office, not in a hotel lobby somewhere, and they're going to confidently make an informed decision about your vacation ownership, which, by the way, could mean that they can't fix you or that you can't find an agreement on how to fix you. Call them today at 844-409-EXIT, 844-409-3948. Do the grown-up thing. Get out of that timeshare that you keep throwing money away on if that's your choice. It's all at timeshareexitteam.com. Mary? Adam Andrzejewski is here. Forbes.com is where you can see, continued series. It's like Adam Andrzejewski, the miniseries now, as we continue to open the books. Openthebooks.com is the website. Your goal is to have this be the case for every major city and every state in the country, to have every public dollar spent be apparent online. It makes total sense.
So right now we've got 4 billion individually captured government transactions at the federal, state, and local levels across the country. In order to get this, Steve, our team files about 100,000 Freedom of Information Act open records requests every single year.
This is actual transparency, not political transparency. This is actual transparency, and that'd be the difference.
And in the era of fake news, I think it's highly critical. Journalism needs to get back to hard data. Citizens on the Bernie Sanders center left and the Donald Trump center right, they're rightfully angry because they know something is fundamentally wrong. And we show them exactly what is wrong with the spending of their tax dollar.
And for those folks who may be a little bit confused, when you say the era of fake news, you mean the actual fake news, not the actual journalists that are trying to report real news in their windows.
That's right.
Patronage. Patronage is something that old Mayor Daley was very good at. And he taught everybody, right down to Mike Madigan, the last proprietor of the great patronage machine, the way it used to be done, on how to do it. Patronage is easy enough to explain, and that you do something for me. I want to maintain my power base. I'm going to make sure you're okay down the road. I'm going to give you a big job. I'm going to make sure you get the overtime, whatever the case may be. Your point, if I understand it correctly, at Open the Books, is that Mayor Emanuel has continued to do this. What's he getting out of it?
Well, there's a couple different ways that he's running patronage. The first way, and I covered this 2 years ago when he was running for re-election, is that he has, from 600 city vendors, he's taken $7 million worth of campaign cash. But those city vendors, since Mayor Daley and Rahm Emanuel over the course of a 12-year period, they took $2 billion in city payments. And I wrote about this at Forbes in a piece called The Moral Bankruptcy of the Chicago Elite. What we exposed today at Forbes in the piece, Can Rahm Emanuel Run Chicago, is the fact that there are nearly 11,000 six-figure salaries now in the city of Chicago. Without the $300 million of overtime, there'd only be 5,000 six-figure salaries. The number of six-figure payments doubles with the overtime. And this is how Rahm Emanuel, from the grassroots on up, is keeping the city workforce very happy by lining their wallets with a little bit of extra cash.
Reading this as a city resident, just stepping back and being a taxpayer in the city of Chicago and reading this, I could possibly look past some of the overtime issues because I want to be safe. I want the police and the fire out there. What struck me very much so, Adam, is the fact that the tree trimmers are making $160,000 a year, and nothing against the aviation commissioner or that position, but to make over $400,000 a year, and that's almost tripling what the salary was when the previous director was in.
That's right. So we found that Ginger Evans is the commissioner of aviation in the city. She's the most highly compensated city employee, and she made, like you said, $400,000 last year, and she double-dipped the system. Her predecessor, Rosemarie Andrelino, made only $184,000 and no bonus. The new commissioner, Evans, she made $300,000 with a $100,000 bonus.
Market value is a term that should come into play with these jobs. Are we close to any market value on what these folks actually should be paid?
Why?
I mean, compare it to L.A., compare it to New York.
Look, you got tree trimmers for $109,000, plumbers for $160,000, auto pound supervisors for $145,000. I don't think there's any market value here. And these type of things need to be squeezed out. Look, when Rahm Emanuel won for mayor in 2011, he promised a forensic audit, an aggressive audit to squeeze out waste, fraud, corruption, and abuse, to make sure that there was effective resource management within the departments. And what our audit of his payroll shows that this was never going to happen. Real reform was never going to happen.
Have you seen any
improvement? He's codified his political power.
Have you seen any improvement since he took office?
Well, you know, going back and looking at history, so Rahm Emanuel about a year ago promised 1,000 new police officers on the street.
Great idea.
But he had cut over the course of his first 5 years 1,000 police officers from the street. So no, I don't see any improvement at all.
Is there a way to do this and still manage a city the size of Chicago? Or would the argument be because you're Rahm Emanuel and you're in the position you're in, this is an ongoing process. I'm not going to say it's perfect. I've got to keep working at it.
Well, I think that
in other words,
there's plenty
I
of money
inherited it and I've got to spend it appropriately. But there's only so many hours in the day and I'm trying to fix it.
So Rahm Emanuel, he's obviously the smartest person in the room in terms of government. He's got to, you know, he touts his management credentials every time at reelection. He's had 6 years in the position. The fact that this gross mismanagement of resources is still going on. I mean, this falls right. The mayor owns this issue. He owns nearly $300 million worth of overtime.
Could any of these jobs eventually not be political hires, like aviation commissioner, streets and sand, water department? Could any of those just be regular jobs where you go in and apply and the mayor or city doesn't pick?
Well, I think that the powers that be, the political powers that be, they like to have the picks. And when it comes time for reelection, they own those picks. They own that compensation. And we, the people, can hold them accountable at the ballot box for their tax and spend decisions.
There is similar problems, obviously, at the state level, and there's similar problems around the country. But based on what you know about the ongoing work you're doing at OpenTheBooks.com, how bad off are we?
So we're so bad off that at the fire department, the overtime is not extending. And, you know, you'd think that you'd have rank and file firefighters that are making a lot of money. And our data shows you actually don't. The top firefighter made a lot of money, $129,000. But out of all the city firefighters, Christopher Zahn had a base salary of $90,000, $39,000 of overtime. But here's the thing.
I can live with that.
13 police chiefs out-earned the fire commander. And the police chiefs made, the fire chiefs, 13 fire chiefs out-earned the commissioner, Jose Santiago. Now, Santiago made $202,000. The 13 chiefs, they were knocking down overtime of up to six figures.
Was this, I know we're way long here, but was this some way during the second Mayor Daley's administration, maybe that it got ingrained, that we're never going to be able to make base salaries work? So overtime became the way to pay people.
Well, and I fundamentally disagree with that because I come from private sector.
Right, but I'm asking.
In the private sector, these things would never be going on.
And nor should they.
Right.
But I'm asking, is that the ingrained poison that's in there? Is that part of the problem?
Well, with Rahm Emanuel, he He's the mayor. The buck stops with him. Right. He promised the efficient delivery of city services. And you can't efficiently deliver city services when things are this out of control.
First thing to fix it is what? Because of my concern.
Look, Illinois at all levels, we need serious people. I mean, in Chicago, the pension systems are nearly insolvent, and the state of Illinois, they're taxing everything. They're taxing plastic bags, for crying out loud.
Right.
You know, the Cubs socks and concert tickets. So, you know, the people, rightfully, are upset, and it's becoming expensive to live here. Think about this. Since 1950, 1 million city residents have fled the city for prosperity elsewhere. And just last year, Chicago led the nation among the large cities with 20,000 people fleeing the city of Chicago.
Here's my only concern going forward, because we need more light shined on this. And that's why I salute what you guys do. And that's why you're always going to be
welcome
here.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Again, it's openthebooks.com and also at Every Dime Online for social media. But this is a big city with a lot of issues. And I maintain, if you don't have a tough mayor to control the aldermen, we'll be Detroit within 15 minutes. So the idea of voting out Rahm to bring somebody in, I'd like to know who the next alternative is. I'm not trying to excuse anything that you're discussing here, because I believe everything you've written, and I'm your fan. You know that. But I don't want people to go, well, look, we got to make a change. We got to make a change, because I think we've seen how that worked in the White House. We don't need just a populist who's going to say political things. We need somebody who's willing to get into government for the right reasons, be paid what they're worth, and clean the system up. And I don't know who that individual is.
So at OpenTheBooks.com, we're a public charity, so we don't engage in politics. But we do shine that light, and we strongly believe that putting out these fact patterns will help good people rise to the top. And in the absence of that, the people need to hold Rahm Emanuel accountable, and maybe he'll start making better management
decisions.
Do the
job better than you're doing it now. Nice to see you. Where can people see the Forbes piece today?
If you Google Rahm Emanuel, it'll come right up. Rahm Emanuel, Forbes. You can also come to openthebooks.com, where obviously the mayor is suing the president on sanctuary cities. We have a report on our website, on our homepage, in the report section on sanctuary cities that was covered on CNN and NBC on the national platforms. Chicago got $5.3 billion from the federal government last year. And so there's a lot of money at stake on sanctuary cities.
Yeah, and where's de Blasio and Garcetti to stand next to him at the press conference? That'd be my concern, too, if I were wrong. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Steve.
Come
Thanks
back
for
anytime.
Having me in the studio. This has been great.
Again, it's Adam Andrzejewski, openthebooks.com. We'll take a quick break. Come back with a big story next.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I'm not going to play much golf because there's a lot of work to be done.
I don't know where the president was. He wasn't very far away. Maybe he was playing golf.
Obama went golfing every day. Let Obama go play golf every day.
Obama plays more golf than professional players on the PGA Tour.
Played a lot of golf. He's played more than most PGA touring professionals.
More than a guy who plays on the PGA Tour plays.
PGA Tour.
PGA Tour.
If you become president and you go to the White House, why would you want to leave the White House?
Who wants to leave the White House?
If I get elected president, I'm going to be in the White House a lot. I'm not leaving.
I mean, this guy, golf, 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 more, more. Learning how to chip, learning how to hit the drive, learning how to putt. Oh, I want more.
Yeah, you can't make it up. You just can't make it up. And then like a 9-year-old who got caught when the light was broken and he was the only one in the room, he tweets out this weekend, "It's not a vacation. I'm taking calls and having meetings." 3 minutes later, there's a picture of him in a golf cart. Just own it, man. Own it.
En route to a meeting.
I tweeted this out this weekend. I believe it to be true. It's got to be tiring to lie that much. It's got to be tiring to put out that amount of BS every day. No wonder you need a vacation. Enjoy it. As a matter of fact, take the rest of your 4 years off. It's totally fine. Play golf every day. I would encourage all of us as taxpayers to pay for more Trump vacation time. As Ryan Nobles from CNN joins us. Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
Steve, good morning to you. And, you know, I think the point that needs to be made is that, you know, every time a president goes on vacation, people criticize him. There's no problem with presidents taking vacations. I think the obvious point you're making here is that this particular president was so critical of
previous presidents. Ridiculous.
Doing exactly what he's doing now. Yeah.
No, it's okay as long as I'm doing it. It's not okay if anybody else does it. But when Bush went to the ranch, when Obama went to Hawaii, wherever, the president is always on the clock. There's always an ability to contact the president. It's not like he's out of cell service somewhere. So we all need to take a breath about it. But just the blatant lies and hypocrisy, ugh. And you made the point off the air a second ago. Ryan is right about this, and this is good reporting. Apparently, somebody gave the president his Twitter password back because he's all over it this morning, isn't he?
I can't take credit for that joke. I saw it somewhere else on Twitter. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it was. It seemed as though after John Kelly took over as chief of staff, which we see this frequently with the president, that, you know, every time there's kind of a new atmosphere in the White House, he kind of straightens himself up. We saw that during the campaign, too, after Paul Manafort took over as his campaign chairman. You know, he kind of calmed down, was reading the prompter more, was tweeting less. That usually lasts for about 1 or 2 weeks, and then he gets right back to his normal behavior, and that's exactly what we're seeing. You know, he was on a tweet storm this morning. He spent a lot of time tweeting over the weekend. This morning he was being critical of Richard Blumenthal's interview on CNN, which was interesting that he was able to glean so much information from that interview when he claims that he never watches CNN. So that, I thought, was a pretty interesting point.
Part of his complaints about Blumenthal are some comments Blumenthal made about his service in the military, which turned out not to be true, but they're so deep in the weeds now, and it's so contrary to anything that's being discussed. I don't know. It's the same thing with the Pence story this weekend. Mike Pence getting very enraged and incensed that people could say that he might be considering running if the president doesn't run. I think it'd be malpractice by the vice president if he wasn't prepared to be the president, whether it means now or later.
Well, I really think that this is one of the most compelling storylines coming out of the White House right now. I mean, you've got a New York Times report that, you know, it was good reporting, no doubt, but it wasn't necessarily that revelatory, that you've got a group of Republicans who are basically just making sure that they've got all their T's crossed and I's dotted just in case Donald Trump decides not to run in 2020 or if something happens to his presidency. And among those people is the vice president. And, you know, they pointed to some, you know, publicly available information that a lot of these guys are making trips to Iowa. I was in Iowa a couple months ago when the vice president was there. I mean, that happened. That did not happen. And, you know, the way that the vice president is reacting to it is really incredible, because first he sent his spokesperson out to just, you know, trash the New York Times about it. And then the vice president himself put out a statement, an official White House statement to push back on the article. It almost seems like he's protesting a bit too much. Like, you know, I don't think that the way he's behaving is necessarily that out of the ordinary. And I think the question you have to ask is this something that came from Trump himself that told Pence to push back on this, or does Pence understand how the White House works? And if there's any display of disloyalty, that could end up being a big problem for him. Either scenario is possible, but it's worth pointing out that there's been no one who's been more consistently loyal to Donald Trump than Mike Pence, you know, especially once he became his running mate and now vice president.
It's Ryan Nobles from CNN. More with Ryan in just a second. Let's update your traffic. Mary Vandeveld live on the seventh floor. What's happening now? Ryan Nobles is one of CNN's finest and, you know, spends the entire weekend making sure we're safe while we're out having picnics and a good time. And rejoins us now at Ryan Nobles all over your social media. Andrea, say hi to Ryan.
Ryan, good morning to you. Question, I'm sure you saw the tweets already, but everybody was mentioned. There was nobody left out today when the president talked about fake news. CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS, New York Times, while he says the Trump base is getting stronger. And Steve and I talking off the air about how the White House Facebook page is now, who is it, Steve, his niece?
It's Kayleigh McEnany and his daughter, one of his daughters-in-law.
Right, reading, which scream propaganda to me.
They're video press releases.
It's crazy. Have you ever seen, I know the answer, it's a loaded question, but have you ever seen anything like this?
Well, actually, this is not that out of the ordinary. You know, I guess perhaps the way that the president is using that particular medium to spread his message is maybe a little bit attempting to mimic the news a little more than what we normally see. But, you know, the Obama administration used to produce this thing called White House Week or West Wing Week. I can't remember specifically what it was called. But it was a slickly produced video that was easily shareable on social media. And it was basically just all the wonderful things that Barack Obama has done this week. So it's not necessarily out of the ordinary for presidents to try and get around the quote-unquote mainstream media to get their message out. I guess what's a little alarming about this is that they're making it look like a news broadcast. Yeah. And the fact that the president himself is so critical of the media, this is clearly an effort to counterbalance that. But yeah, and then, you know, you got someone like Kayleigh McEnany, who's, you know, used to work for us at CNN up until like a day or two ago. And so she's a voice and a face that someone recognizes from the mainstream media. So it is an interesting tactic by him. It's not necessarily that out of the ordinary, but I can understand why it makes people uncomfortable.
We've talked about this briefly, too. What concerns me is just that the use of the word fake news. I was at a restaurant having dinner on Friday, yeah, and the waitress came over. We're talking about something that affects the city of Chicago, the paper bag tax, the plastic bag tax is what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, you know, blah, 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 blah. Well, it's not fake news. She said everything now is fake news. And I said, okay, you're not using the term wrong. I think that term is thrown out so often that everybody thinks every news story that's out there is fake news.
Well, fortunately, not everybody, but he has done a good job of branding it. He's done a good job of, making it part of the public discussion.
And that's dangerous.
And that video you're talking about, they call that real news. So that's their way of kind of, you know, cutting through that. But what the president has successfully done is that he's coined the term fake news and made it something that is news that you don't particularly agree with the viewpoint or the premise that has been delivered by that news outlet. So whether or not it's true or not has nothing to do with whether or not it's fake. It's whether or not you like it. So if you don't like something, then you can declare it fake news. And Andre, you're 100% right. That shakes to the core of our democracy and the First Amendment itself, because the average American, because this is the thing, and I have to stop myself because I swim in this all day long.
Yeah,
I'm listening to every piece of information that comes out, so it's easy for me to sift through it. The average American doesn't have the time to do that, and I don't blame them. So if you're the average American and you're trying to figure out what exactly is right or wrong, this is such a perfect tactic because it's confusing. And then you end up thinking it's so easy for you to be convinced that everything is fake. And that becomes a real problem.
Yeah. And the irresponsibility of it to have the president of the United States not either recognize or not care about the damage he's doing by continuing to throw this out. It's just a flat lie. It's a lie every time it falls out of his mouth or every time he tweets it. And he doesn't care. He doesn't care. So that's why I hope he has another 3.5 years of vacation if he's going to be around that long. In the meantime, before we let you run, Ryan Nobles, sanctions that came down, Nikki Haley, in my opinion, has done a really good job at the United Nations and has not exactly towed the company line, was able to get a 15-0 vote on imposing sanctions on North Korea and others. Where do we go with this?
Yeah. Well, I think the most significant aspect of that is what you mentioned, the 15-0 vote, because that means that she got China and Russia to vote for this, even though it, you know, China and Russia have been very murky in their stance as it relates to North Korea. There's some belief that perhaps it helps both China and Russia to have a North Korea that's a little bit destabilized and keeping America on its heels. But I think everyone, especially after this last ICBM launch, are concerned that maybe this is becoming a real thing here that we can't just allow to fester. And so now, you know, to get Russia and China involved on such a very, you know, direct level, I think is very important. But, you know, I still think that the issue with North Korea is such a huge problem. And, you know, at what end? How does this end? And, you know, they've already been sanctioned to death. It's, you know, become one of the most desolate countries in the world as a result of this. How much more can you do to this despot of a leader to prevent him from taking these further steps? You know, I saw one of our military analysts over the weekend on CNN talk about it, and I can't remember what it was, but he said, at this point, there's no leverage left with North Korea because there's nothing left to take away from them. So what's the next step? And, you know, there are some saber-rattling members of Congress that are suggesting that there's some form of military intervention that could be, you know, that could cost millions of lives, literally. So this is a very difficult position that the world finds itself in, and it's going to be Donald Trump that is going to have to find a way through this. He's going to be the most important person in this discussion.
It's Ryan Nobles, at Ryan Nobles on social media at 8:01. And thank you for the time, as always, Ryan. Enjoy your day.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great day.
And we're back with Dean after we do the news next on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, ho!
live to Channel 9 where Dean Richards is standing by. Morning, Dean.
Yes, I am standing by, ready to go, fresh, relaxed, off of a great weekend.
What did you do that was so great this weekend?
I did nothing.
I bet that was great.
Aren't those the best weekends?
It is pretty good. Yeah, it is pretty
nothing,
good.
Just, ran a couple of errands, but mostly relaxed. Ate some delicious food, ate some more delicious food. Then I had some delicious food, and after that, even more delicious food.
You love to cook, don't you? What do you like better, cooking or eating?
Well, I like both.
Yeah.
I like both, although I did none of the cooking this weekend.
But I don't see you giving up the cooking. I see you as more of a kitchen-controlled guy.
I always enjoy when somebody else does,
oh, you do?
Does the work, and especially the cleanup.
Dean and I have been out to dinner a few times with other people, and he usually will rush the kitchen, slap the utensils out of the chef's hands, and go to work himself.
I'm like those annoying chefs you see on the cooking competition show. No, that's too much!
Right.
More oregano.
Right. That's where we were. We were at More Oregano. More oregano. That was the name of the restaurant. Here's what's coming up today. You got a Hollywood breakup that might surprise you. You got a recap of Lollapalooza. Michael Keaton interviewed. Taylor Swift trial begins. Who stuck their hand up her shirt?
Actually, it was a little lower than that.
It was lower than that?
Yeah.
And this is good for the business. Turns out it was a radio guy, allegedly.
Hey, man, watch what I do when I take a picture with Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Ronnie Wood from the Stones. Health news there. But there's two stories that jump out before the break.
Yes.
One is Despacito. Despacito. Oh, muy despacito.
Do we have a little for the Despacito?
Ah, do we have Despacito? Oh, play some Despacito, please. Poor favor. No, we don't have it?
I didn't send it, but I just figured you have that ready to go at any time.
We usually, you know our slogan here, much more talk, much less music. Give me a little Despacito.
Me?
Oh, we're still looking for Despacito. I'm sorry.
Despacito.
One of the things when we move Spanish studios right. That will come in handy. There we go.
Despacito. Oh, despacito.
Muy caliente. Iba, iba, ándale, ándale, epa, epa, hija. I speak Speedy Gonzalez.
You know, I'm going to miss when we're no longer in that studio anymore, when we move, watching people do the forbidden dance right in front of the window.
The Despacito dance?
Yeah.
What I was going to say is, about 8 o'clock when the sun comes up on a sunny day, I can no longer see the producer's booth because of the reflection and the glare.
Right.
So I can't see any hand signals of any kind. That is usually when Mike Jacobson will start flipping me off in the middle of the show.
Yeah.
We had some Lollapalooza leftover fans this morning doing a little Despacito against the window today.
Yeah, they were.
They were waving and gesturing.
Nice guests.
Despacito is now the most listened to song on the internet by what?
It has been the most streamed song of all time, but this weekend it exceeded 3 billion views on YouTube.
3 billion?
Billion.
Billion!
And is now the most popular YouTube clip of all time, eclipsing Wiz Khalifa and Charlie Puth's See You Again.
What about that clip where the kid was all goofed up on the dentist gas and the family was laughing at him?
Even
That's
close.
Even bigger than that?
Not even close. Oh. In order now, it's Despacito, mm-hmm. See You Again, and Gangnam Style.
Oh. Okay. I think you two should do some sort of a French video, and I bet you can supersede all three of those.
Actually, we do a thing where I speak Spanish and Dean speaks French and nothing gets accomplished.
Andrea, you'll appreciate this. I was at a Greek festival a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And the Greek DJ who was playing the music, there was a Greek spoofing of Despacito called Pastizo.
Oh, I love it. Pastizo.
Pastizo, which is the Greek
pastizo.
Lasagna.
The Greek lasagna, yeah.
It's Greek food humor.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, I am friend of the Greeks, and I like to yell out Oprah just like the rest of you.
Opa.
What?
Opa.
Oh, that was Oprah.
No, you say Oprah.
Oh, I thought it was Oprah.
I thought it was Oprah all these years.
All right, we'll come back with Anthony Scaramucci news and all the other things previously mentioned. First, Mary Vanderbilt has a traffic trouble spots update.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9720.
Back to Dean at Channel 9. So the Mooch is coming to TV.
Well, it's been reported on TMZ, which I have to say has been pretty reliable at lots of their stories like this, that the Mooch, Anthony Scaramucci, has been spotted meeting with a major Hollywood producer to create what is being called a Washington version of the old Michael J. Fox sitcom Spin City. The concept is supposed to be that the Mooch would be an outsider storming to power in Washington, clashing with political veterans.
And would he star in it?
That's the word right now, that he would produce it and also appear on it.
Here's a couple of titles that I think are possible. How about Who's the Boss? Just a redo of Who's the Boss.
Yeah.
How about Curb Your Enthusiasm? Because I think we were tired of that in the first 10 days. No? How about Leave It to Moochie? Huh? How about Leave It to Moochie?
With Sean Spicer and the Mooch walking down the street like Wally and Beaver used to.
You guys don't think a Friends remake is in there?
No.
Friends in quotes.
Right. Yeah. All of those who have left the administration.
Maybe enemies.
The actual working title for this right now is, in reality, 10 Days in July.
It sounds like a war movie.
I know.
Which is kind of what it would be.
Yeah.
Here's the text question then for the rest of the show. Name the Mooch sitcom. What's a great name for the Mooch sitcom, if in fact there is one? Name it. Texters 312-981-7200 is the number. What's the Ron Wood story?
Ronnie Wood disclosed that he recently had surgery to have part of his lung removed. He was diagnosed with, as he put it, a touch of lung cancer. You know, the Brits can be so delicate.
Oh, I got the lung cancer. I've come down with it. The 24 hours.
I've got a touch of lung cancer.
Yeah.
He told a British newspaper that he was diagnosed in May. I didn't realize that you go through routine physicals before you start a concert tour, but I guess when everybody in the band is over 70 years old, 70, 75 years old, it's a smart idea. But
to get the concert tour insured, I think that's standard ops,
that's
right?
That's probably very true. Anyway, they removed part of his lung. The cancer had not spread. That's the good news. He said he was not surprised since he had been a lifelong chain smoker. But this is interesting. He said that had the cancer spread and it wound up being worse than what the prognosis seems to be right now, he would not have gone through chemotherapy. He would have just said goodbye.
Well, he's got a right to do that.
Interesting choice.
You know, and he's how old again?
He is
75.
I got to double.
You got to be close. The listeners are chiming in already from the Mooch sitcom.
Of course.
6 feet under. Chachi loves Moochie.
It's actually a really good one.
10 days at a time as opposed to 1 day at a time.
Right.
Well, so there you go. It's all coming.
Ronnie Wood, 70 years old. By
70.
Way.
Okay. Well, he looks terrific.
In human years.
So we had a DJ reach his hand behind Taylor Swift during a photo op.
Hey, man, why better get a photo op with Taylor Swift?
You know what Taylor Swift would like? A little squeezy from Dr. Love. So what did he do to her, allegedly?
A Denver DJ is being accused of...
Denver? That's where Eric's from.
What?
Yeah, the Eric and Kathy. Eric?
From
Denver? He was in Denver, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I never knew
but
that.
But it's not him, is it?
No, it's not.
Unless they got enough problems.
Maybe
I'm not
he
helping.
Went by a fake radio name like David Mueller.
Is that his name?
That's the guy who is being sued. He is suing and being sued. Taylor Swift alleges that David Mueller, man, reached under her dress and touched her inappropriately during a backstage meet and greet in 2013.
I remember when I did that to Meatloaf back when I was a DJ.
Because you thought it was actual Meatloaf.
Now, look, here's my take.
An honest mistake with Steve. He was hungry. He said, hey, you want some meatloaf?
Here's my hot take on this. Taylor Swift has got plenty to do with her day. Taylor Swift doesn't need to make this Denver DJ famous. Taylor Swift is really angry.
Yep.
This had to have happened.
Civil trial is going to begin today, and Taylor Swift is expected to testify in this. But here's the thing. This Mueller guy is suing Taylor Swift, claiming that he was falsely accused with this and she caused him to lose his job when Swift went to Mueller's bosses complaining about this instead of calling the police. So he's suing her for $3 million in damages for causing to lose the
Because he got
job.
Fired?
Yeah.
He got fired from the Shotgun Johnny Morning Show or whatever
it is. The Mueller Morning Zoo.
Yeah. The Big Mooch, All in the Family with a question mark. Give me a break. As from John DeCoste, 10 is enough. That's pretty strong.
That's a good one.
Moving on. What's Michael Keaton doing?
Michael Keaton's got a new movie called American Assassin that's going to be coming out in the middle of September. And I talked with him a couple of weeks ago. Went to L.A. and we chatted about the movie. But this was the day that they announced that David Letterman was going to be getting the Mark Twain Prize. They're old buddies from their, literally from the beginnings of their career. So
Well, they both did the Mary Tyler Moore thing, right?
And they did the Mary Tyler Moore variety show that was called Mary, where they both awkwardly sang and danced. Which was hilarious.
That clip is tremendous. It's
on
YouTube.
It's the best clip ever.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And I asked him about Dave, but also Mary Tyler Moore. Your buddy Dave Letterman is being honored the Mark Twain Prize.
Oh, about time.
Yeah. We love showing that clip of you and he dancing on the Mary Tyler Moore show. We love that. What are your best memories of Dave?
Well, there's lots. We kind of hit the Comedy Store at the same time. And so during the day, we'd go out, maybe shoot a little ball, you know, and we were actually both kind of playing tennis at the time, you know, a little park in these parks, you know, beat up old tennis courts. But at night, he was, when I saw this guy, and everyone thought the same thing, he was like whip smart and like lightning fast on his feet. And everybody just said, oh man, this guy's just really as quick and on his feet as anybody I've ever seen. And everybody knew it was funny. And then when we started working together on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, it was so odd, but at the same time, she was so wonderful. She was such a wonderful woman, really nice woman, and she was really nice to the both of us.
Yeah, if you do nothing else today, look up David Letterman, Michael Keaton, Mary Tyler Moore. Google that. You'll find the clip of them doing a song and dance number to With a Little Luck, the Paul McCartney song, with all of them singing and dancing, and Letterman and Keaton could not look any less interested. Or
Letterman looks like he wishes he were going to be hit by lightning right then.
He wishes that he could be dead right at that moment. Yeah, absolutely.
Come more sitcoms. Mooching on Up. Little Mooch on the Prairie. Chico and the Mooch.
Little Mooch on the Prairie.
And this one I don't understand. Rhoda. Oh, and you remember F Troop? This is F Mooch.
Oh,
that's not bad.
Say something else.
That's pretty strong.
F word. It could be F word.
Yeah. This is sweet too. How I Unmet Your Mother. Remember, his wife was 9 months pregnant.
Thoughtful.
All right, I have no time left. Quick Hollywood couple split.
Anna Faris and Chris.
What?
Pratt. Yeah, considered the happiest.
Oh, that
couple
sucks.
In Hollywood. Both so sweet, both so nice, but they announced that they've been having problems trying to work it out. They're not able to. So
that's too bad. I mean, they seemed great together.
They sure did. Yeah, they sure did. This was a big, big shocker this morning.
That's too bad.
Legal separation for them right now.
Hey, ladies, Chris Pratt's available.
Nice. Let it cool off a little.
That's Dean, and he's doing Lollapalooza recaps all morning on Channel 9, so check that out as well. CLTV joins us in a few. Thank you, buddy.
Bye.
Back at the Big Story next.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
All right, let's talk tailgating. It's almost tailgating time. Dave, do you tailgate before you call a Northwestern game?
I do not. I have a lot of friends who do, and I have made it a tradition to stop by a tailgate party after each game at home.
Oh, you do?
There's some friends who've been doing it for over 20 years, and it's a ritual. The coaches stop by. It's a pretty big tailgate party, and so, you know, it's a nice way to end the day.
The history of tailgating as seen through the arena, inside the tailgating, ticket scalping, mascot racing, dubiously funded and possibly haunted moments and monuments of American sports. The author is Rafi Cohen and joins us now. Good morning, Rafi.
Morning. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate you coming on. And I have great respect for the fact that you turned a good time into a job here.
or at least a project.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Where'd the arena inspiration come from?
Oh, well, if I'm being completely honest, I think this whole idea was just an elaborate excuse to get to shoot a t-shirt cannon. But if I'm talking to my editor,
right?
I'm a huge sports fan, love going to games, but it was never really just, you know, the games themselves that kind of excited me. I always kind of paid attention to these other, you know, sort of elements of the stadium experience, you know, from the like, fans tailgating before the game to, you know, the smells and the concourse of beer and hot dogs and peppers and onions, you know, to watching the mascot work and the groundskeepers work. So it just, you know, it seemed like I never really knew enough about these worlds, these kind of underworlds of the stadium. So I felt like I wanted to explore that and see what it was that kind of enabled our own fan experience.
And you do it in the arena, out and available everywhere. I don't know if I've ever said this on the show before, but get two copies. You're careless. You might lose the first one. also download it wherever books are downloadable. Let's talk about the tailgating portion of this. Is there a history to this? I mean, obviously there's a history to it, but who started this?
You know, there's sort of a disputed history of tailgating. I didn't necessarily nail down a specific, you know, one versus another, but there's lots of myths around, you know, sort of individual city tailgates. One guy I spoke to, Cliff Crystal, who used to, you know, was a sports journalist up in Milwaukee, and then now is a official team historian with the Packers. You know, he says that he believes it started around Packers games, when, you know, folks would just sort of, you know, just start picnicking. And basically, I spoke to folks at Penn State who said the same thing, that basically, you know, they were trying to get to Beaver Stadium for a Penn State game, and there was so much traffic on those small country roads that they said, you know, forget it, let's just, you know, park here in the middle of the street and have a picnic. So I think it's interesting, you know, sort of however it started. I mean, it's blown up in a way that, you know, we can all appreciate as fans, as in sort of an integral part of the game day experience.
And what do you cover in the book in regards to tailgating specifically?
Well, you know, I really, it's more that it sort of peppers in through a bunch of chapters, you know, sort of in, when I spend time in Green Bay, you know, I spend hours and hours tailgating with, you know, the cheeseheads up there and sort of getting their unique take on it, where, you know, the town and the team have this, you know, super intimate relationship, of course, because it's a community-owned franchise, the only one in American professional sports. And you can sort of feel that emotional ownership with things like the Wedge of Allegiance and the Oath of the Lambeau Field Virgin that kind of, you know, are just as big a part of it as, you know, cooking up some meat and drinking some beers. And then I tailgated out in Oakland with the Black Hole folks before I caught a game with them there.
That's when they took you hostage and threatened to kill you and demanded ransom.
Yeah, you know, I probably should have signed a release form before I went in.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, those guys get a bad rap. You know, they're the Raiders executives. They have a term for the folks who come in and cause trouble. They call them one game wonders because they'll insist that they're not the real fans. But look, you know, you can find trouble probably in any super fan crew.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I think what Rafi has here is that syndrome where you identify with your captors.
Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, you got a little bit of Stockholm syndrome going on there. The Raiders fans, deeply, deeply disturbed, dangerous people. Andrea.
Rafi, at least what I've seen is, do you think tailgating has kind of gotten to the extreme? It used to be burgers and brats on the grill. I was invited to one at Soldier Field a few years ago, and I couldn't go. And I had my friend sending me pictures. They had lobster tail and a Bloody Mary bar.
Oh.
And they said, oh, here's what you missed.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, yes. I mean, everywhere you go, there's always one crew who has kind of like a white tent set up. And I swear, I've seen one tailgates with chandeliers and like five-course menus that they hand out, you know, to guests when they arrive. Yeah, there's no doubt it's going over the top. When I was in Arlington, Texas, where the Dallas Cowboys play, I mean, they take their tailgating as an excuse just to throw a party. I mean, I swear every single tailgate had a professional or amateur DJ, you know, just blasting tunes. You couldn't hear anything. You couldn't make out any music because everyone was just, you know, had their own playlist going. But absolutely, I mean, some people, you know, they take their tailgating seriously. I know guys who plan their tailgate menus months in advance.
And, you know, they'll spend all Friday, you know, ahead of a, you know, college football Saturday morning packing up their minivans in exactly the right way so they can unload it and have, you know, the hors d'oeuvres coming out first and, you know, followed by what you're throwing on the grill. I mean, there's some people who I think you can make the argument that it's even more important than the game.
You know, there are people at Notre Dame. I've seen this at Penn State where they pull in their RVs. They're there all week. They don't go to the game. They're just there for the atmosphere and the tailgating.
The game sort of gets in the way.
It does. I think it interferes with their plans.
A couple of things covered in the arena include ticket scalping and mascot racing. I love a good mascot race. But what about the ticket scalping? Has it changed?
Oh, it's changed big time. And it's really, I mean, I think it's undergoing, you know, it's continuing to undergo a crazy revolution on two fronts, really. I embedded with a group of ticket scalpers up in Cleveland and then another couple individuals around Fenway Park. And they all say the same thing, which is that ticket scalping is a dying, you know, it's a dying trade, largely because the online secondary market has just taken over in the last half decade or so. You know, around 2010, something like 60 to 70% of the secondary ticket market took place outside of venue. And as of 2015, that was down to about 15 or 20%. I mean, that's such a huge chunk of the market that's just disappeared completely. I mean, people don't even think about going to actually buy from a scalper at this point when you can just click onto StubHub or SeatGeek or I don't know, whichever one of them is your sponsor. And, you know, and just click on it, you know, 2 minutes before the game and scan your phone to get in. And in addition to that, and sort of dovetailing with that, a lot of teams are trying to create these like all digital environments, right, where there are no physical paper tickets that you can even swap, you know, over to a ticket scalper and they can swap back over to you. I mean, I think it's kind of sad because it really is an organic element of the experience, sort of the same way that tailgating is. But, you know,
the business changed.
It's just the reality.
Yeah, the business changed. Right? Rafi Cohen, who really needs a legitimate job because it's clear he's not working one right now. the book is called The Arena, Inside the Tailgating, Ticket Scalping, Mascot Racing, Dubiously Funded, Possibly Haunted Monuments of American Sports. Get two copies. You know, you're gonna leave one somewhere and you'll have a backup plan.
Probably in a stadium.
How about one for every bathroom in your house there, fella? Huh? Yeah, right?
That's a good plan.
The Arena. Here's what we want to do, Rafi. Tell your publisher to send us three or four copies of this so we can give them away to the listeners on the condition that they tell three friends to buy another copy.
I love that idea.
All right. So I'm going to have you hook up with Mary to discuss that, and we'll go from there. The book is The Arena. Thank you, Rafi. My friend Tom Dreesen in the house. He's coming up after 9. CLTV will join us next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea. It lingered there to touch your hair and walk with me.
Well, everybody's got their favorite. That happens to be mine.
All summer long, we sang a song, and then we strolled that golden sand. Two sweethearts and the summer wind.
I'm a lucky guy. I get to count Tom Dreesen as one of my friends in life, and he's in studio now. You know, there's nothing better, Tom, than be driving in my 2017 Chevy Tahoe with the sunroof open and the wind blowing through my scalp as I listen to Frank do the summer wind. It's the best.
People always say to me, you know, what's your favorite Frank Sinatra song? And I always say, it depends what mood I'm in. You know,
yeah, but it is something I'd be interested to hear because, as you know better than anybody, comedians don't watch other comedians unless they're tanking. Then comedians will watch. or there's somebody really special, like somebody's killing it maybe for the first time. But you're backstage. You see a million Sinatra shows. Was there one song you wanted to see or two every night?
Well, toward the end of his career, My Way, only because of the way the audience reacted. That was a song he'd sing before his closer. His closer was always...
And everybody knew it was winding down probably, right?
Yeah, that's the point. You know, and New York, New York was his closer because he'd leave him on and up. But the song before would be My Way, and toward the end, it was, that song, the spotlight, the lights would go down and just a spot on him.
Sure.
And now the end is near. And Though I face that final curtain, the audience would burst into tears. People would be, you know, we love you, Frank. It was really something to watch. Really kind of.
Memories of Barbara?
Yeah. I just went to the funeral. I was a pallbearer, and I also spoke at the funeral. You know, I was a pallbearer for Frank, and to be a pallbearer for his wife was really... really something special for
Sad
me.
Bookends, but nice.
Yeah, it really was, yeah.
How old was she?
90. But her legacy will be the Barbara Sinatra Children's Center. No child was turned away. When no one in America would talk about children that were physically, emotionally, and sexually abused, she did. She not only spoke out for it years and years ago, she got Frank and all of his friends to do shows and raise money and build the Barbara Sinatra Children's Center where no child was turned away. I've been there. I've done shows for them for 30 years now. To see these adults now able to function in society that were cruelly, I can't even describe some of the things happening to these kids, but they're functioning now because of that Children's Center. That will be her legacy.
God bless her.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Yeah.
See a lot of old friends, I suppose. That's what happens when you go to a funeral.
Yeah, I mean, it was you know, Robert Wagner and I were pallbearers, well, along with Michael Feinstein and Steve Lawrence, and it was emotional and touching, and you know, Dick Van Dyke, but it was funny too.
Well, that's the thing. 90 is a good run, man. 90's. I hope it was a party on some level.
Oh yeah, we went to the Annenberg Estate, and I emceed a celebration of life of Barbara.
Oh, that's nice.
But even at the church, Dick Van Dyke got up to read the gospel. He said, "Reading from today's gospel without my glasses," and then he proceeded to stumble through the whole gospel.
Right. Yeah, make it up where you lose your place. What are you doing in town?
I'm in town doing a lot of things. Joe Madden had his golf tournament that I went and I played and I did a few jokes and afterward. And then emergency flew back to the Barbara's funeral and then came back. I'm promoting, I'm performing September 16th in Barrington at Marquardt, at Barrington. This guy has a car dealership, Dan Marquardt, and he moves all the cars out and it becomes a showroom. And I'm doing my one-man show in the evening.
Oh, you're kidding. Well, that's kind
of
cool.
Memories of Sinatra. Then on September 23rd...
There's not enough parking in Barrington to move all the cars off a lot.
I know.
Where's he putting them?
I have no
idea. Not your problem.
We're going to do the show there. And then I go September 23rd to where I went to junior college, South Suburban Community College, as a theater, the Kindig Performing Arts Center. And I'm doing a show called From Here to Hollywood. So it's my life, my stand-up comedy, and, of course, my stories.
Sure.
To celebrate their 90th anniversary of South Suburban Community College, and they're all alumnus coming back, and it's open to the public. And Steve, I know you'll be there sitting down front laughing like you always do.
Oh, no, heckle. I'll heckle. You know, man, I'm a big heckler. How's the club doing in town? Are you still involved with it?
The Laugh Factory on Belmont and Broadway. Yeah, I go down there. I have a couple shares in it, but I go down there and get up and do some stand-up comedy and break in some new material, as you know. And like you say, we stand in the back hoping some comic will tank so we can... for those who are listening and don't understand that, comedians do not like to watch other comedians or hear stories about them getting standing ovations and how funny you were. We love it when you tell us how you bombed.
Right.
That's our favorite pastime.
Right.
No way.
And it's weird, too, for Tom Dreesen or me as golfers. You know, when you walk off a golf course, the last thing you want is some chucklehead telling you about every shot he hit.
Yeah.
But everybody will sit down and go, oh, if I only hadn't doubled 17.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the round I would have had if I didn't three-jack those two holes. There's something perverse about it. There's
something dark part
of our psyche.
Golfers do all the time. They'll never hear, and I hate it. You'll say, Steve, what'd you shoot? You know that bunker on two? Okay.
Yeah.
On two? We're on two now. Now we got to go 18 holes. And then on three, you know, I just want to know what you shot. I don't, you know.
Right.
Trying to be polite.
Steve is great, though, at saying, well, how'd you play? Oh, I only shot an 80.
Yeah.
You know, like that's so bad.
Yeah.
I'd die to shoot an 80.
One time in the Celebrity Players Tour, you know, I was on a tour called the Celebrity Players Tour. It was basketball, baseball, football, hockey, tennis, and show business people. that are 10 handicap or below. So it was Johnny Bench, Mike Schmidt, Mario Lemieux, John Elway, Dan Marino, Michael Jordan. We had 42 Hall of Famers. Show business, me and Matt Lauer, Brian Gumbel, Smokey Robinson, Jack Wagner. You know.
Anyhow, Smokey, a good player, by the way.
Yeah, and Jack
back
Wagner.
Back in the day. Oh, Jack's a really good player.
Truly the best celebrity player I've ever seen. But Rick Roden won all the money. Rick Roden, a former pitcher, he'd win $2 million. He won over $2 million on our tour. And so, anyhow, I'm in a clubhouse one day, and everybody played terrible, wind and everything. And Rick Roden walked in. He's got his head down. And we said, Rick, how'd you do? He said, all right, 67. I can't putt. And about four guys, I had to stop four guys from trying to kill him. You know?
Well, I remember playing at a couple of those events, and the entertainment came at lunch. Because at lunch, before you go out for the afternoon wave, the morning guys had just come in, and the afternoon guys hadn't gone out yet. And there were stories at every table. And Johnny Bench was always there. Bench was always great for an hour's worth of entertainment.
Oh, yeah. The fun to me, I always wanted to do a show called Hanging Out with Tom Dreesen. I wrote a script and everything, and I never sold the show, but it's hanging out afterward. In show business, what we do after our shows, and when you work in Vegas and everything, there was always a restaurant or something. We'd all go hang out till 5, 6 in the morning. Frank Sinatra never went to bed till the sun came up. Never. Whether around the road or off the road, when the sun came. And those stories sitting around, or with those athletes in the locker room afterward.
It was tremendous. And
you would hear what really happened. Not the way the watered down version.
I've told Tom this for years. You need to do a show, a book, a tour called Stories I Could Never Tell. And then tell the stories.
Oh, yeah.
Just tell the story. You know, there's got to be 1,000 stories that you've forgotten that would be A-list stories for everybody else.
I tell you, the ones I can't tell, I've never forgotten.
Tom Dreesen's here. If people want information on those shows or tickets, what do they do?
Then go to TomDreesen.com, and everybody spells my name wrong, including probably Steve Cochran.
No, never.
D-R-E-E-S-E-N, TomDreesen.com. And I'll be back in September in Chicago having a lot of fun.
Hang around a second. We'll come back and catch up a little bit more. But before we do that, we got to take a break and catch up on a couple of pieces of business here. And then I'm wondering, are you a dog guy?
I love dogs. Are you kidding me?
Steve Dale, who's been on WGN forever, one of the great dog, cat, critter guys in the country. Steve Dale's bringing a dog in here in a little bit. Mm. And we're going to have him. We're going to put you in the bite suit and see how that goes.
He's not the dog that sniffs out marijuana, is he?
Yeah, because you hang out with show business people. That could be nothing but trouble just from the contact. It's 9:20. More with Tom Dreesen in a second. It's 7:20 WGN.
Come fly with me. Let's fly. Let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay.
Tom Dreesen's here.
Come fly with me.
And before we get to something that happened to Sandberg and with Sandberg this weekend, I was going to ask you about I'm Dying Up Here. This is the William, is it Nettle Cedar?
William Needle Cedar. He was with the L.A. Times. He wrote a book called I'm Dying Up Here.
And it's about stand-up comedy back in the day, which, again, I've said this, like, you and I are friends, but for full disclosure, but I've said this before. You don't get anywhere near the credit you deserve for getting comedians paid. It's hard to imagine a time existed where the biggest names in stand-up comedy through the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, movies, everything else, were making $5 a set or $10 a set, and that was a raise over zero.
Zero. We worked a comedy show for free. We, you know, places packed, lines around the block, and comics got paid zero. And by that time, I was, you know, I'd worked my way through the system.
You were a grown man with a family.
Yeah, now I'm. But then after I graduated from that, we did the Tonight Show and went on my way. I'm touring with Sammy Davis Jr. I came back and helped organize them to a strike, which William Needle Cedar wrote in the book and called "I'm Dying Up Here," which Jim Carrey now optioned, and it's a series on Showtime. You know,
I can't watch it.
I'm a script consultant.
I can't watch it.
I can't. I have to tell you, I'm having a meeting with him when I go back. It's not. They're not showing stand-up comedy. They're showing the dark side, and they're taking stories of things that actually happen to comedians, and it's showing the dark side of comedy.
But here's my question, because I see this all the time. It's like when you take voiceover artists and you put A-list celebrities in place of voiceover artists. Okay, I get how maybe you want to sell a really recognizable voice, but the fact of the matter is you have voiceover artists who do that. Are any of the people in I'm Dying Up Here working comedians?
Yes.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, there's a couple of them that are. But see, the show isn't, if you're turning in to watch their stand-up act, that's not what it's about. It's always the dark side.
Right.
You know, the drugs and the...
The book is terrific.
Yeah.
And I think it tells a great story, an important story. But as far as I'm concerned, I owe you money.
This is the first...
I'm not going to give it to you, okay, this but
is,
I owe it to you.
Thank you, buddy. This is the first year of the show, whether it's going to be picked up or not.
I hope it is, but I just hope they tweak it.
This year was in 1973. The strike happened in 1979, so they got 6 years to go if this
thing. Do I remember this right? Didn't Letterman... I mean, Letterman's one of your best friends.
We
but didn't Letterman come to you and go, you got to talk to her? Talking about the woman
and Letterman, I was already doing television. They weren't. They were brand new. Letterman and
They were afraid to go in because they'd blow their slots, and she would throw you out of the club. You didn't need her like they did.
You have to understand in those days and that every night at the Comedy Store on Sunset Boulevard, every night somebody was getting discovered. That one appearance on the Johnny Carson Show, one appearance, your whole life changed. Freddie Prinze got a sitcom the next day. I did one appearance on the Tonight Show, CBS. Me to a development deal the following day. I mean, the power of...
But it was a lottery ticket that not everybody won on, so therefore pay them the same way you're paying the waiters and the parking attendants and everybody else.
That's
what you got done.
That was my argument to her. 8 week strike, you know.
And that was Mitzi Shore?
Yeah. And I liked her a lot, but she just would not reason. I said, you pay the waiters, the waitresses, the bartenders, you pay the guy who cleans the toilets. Why wouldn't you pay the comedians? She said, they don't deserve to be paid. I said, Mitzi, I finally went to her and I said, you're charging $5 at the door. Charge $6. Let them have the $1. If there's 100 people that night, the comics split up $100 or 200 people. And she was adamant she wasn't going to pay them. So it was about control. And that's when I knew we were in trouble. And that's when it took 8 weeks. A guy committed suicide. Thus the title, I'm Dying Up Here. It's a double entendre, as you know. It's a fascinating...
Jumped off the Hyatt or something, didn't he?
Jumped off the top of the Continental Hyatt House toward the Comedy Store because he couldn't get back on after the strike. And his suicide note said, my name is Steve Lebetkin. I used to work at the Comedy Store.
Wow.
It was sad. It was really a sad time for me.
But I'm like you. I would like to see a little more, because it wasn't all dark side. In comedy, stand-up comedy certainly isn't all dark side. And obviously a little more light in that show. So fix that, will you, Tom?
Talked to him, although one quick thing. 85% of, and this is my humble opinion, 85% of all stand-up comedians that I've met in my 48 years in show business, 85% of all stand-up comedians are insecure, neurotic, sometimes psychotic.
I'd go 90.
Love, starve, wrecks. And the other 15% are gifted, confident people who say, I know how to write a joke and I know how to tell one.
Sure.
I like to think I'm in the latter, but never trust somebody that tells you they're sane.
Sandberg is here. I wanted you to hear this, Tom, before we run out of time. Sandberg has a sister who's terrific. We love your sister. What's your sister's name?
Katie.
And Katie had what this weekend?
She had her dog. It's his golden birthday today. He just turned 7 and it's August 7th. So on Saturday was his golden birthday party. So we all had to attend. And there's a photo gallery of all the dogs in attendance and all the people.
How many dogs showed up?
At WGNradio.com. There was probably 10 dogs.
Did every dog bring a gift?
Everyone did bring a gift. And an interesting detail about the gifts, I asked Katie if Biscuit was going to open the gifts, and she said she didn't want the dogs to fight over the toys, so she waited and did the gifts after all the dogs left.
Now, here's a legit question. Don't yell at me. Did they get a doggy bag?
They did get a doggy bag, yeah. And there was also some kids at the party, and the kids wanted – she did not get kid treat bags. Yeah. And so the doggy bags she got are those natural kind of dog treats where it looks like a cupcake – but there's just no sugar.
Did the kids eat?
Oh, yeah, they were eating. And they're like, well, it's not as bad as I thought, but not so good.
Did the kids chase cars when they left?
They did not chase cars. But all the dogs in the pictures you'll see at WGNRadio.com, or you can see it on the Steve Cochran Facebook page, they're all wearing party hats. They posed. And Katie, a lot of the people there, she did not know the names of the dog owners, but she knew the dogs' names because she lives in a building. And so Odie and Odie's dad came, though we don't know what Odie's dad's name was.
That's great.
That type of thing.
So. I'm a romantic. Did two dogs have it possibly? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of sniffing going
did
on.
Did they hook up?
No, it doesn't see. I didn't really see any love connections happening, but there was.
Yeah, and the dogs wouldn't care. If it happened, it would have happened right there.
Yeah, so
they wouldn't
anyway.
Have the decency to go out to a car.
But I've never heard it described so succinctly. Love connections.
Yes.
It's what well it would. Done.
That's why Sandra. We need the garden hose. But in Hollywood, the land of the most shallow people in America, yes. Have you ever been to a dog birthday party?
I never have. And by the way, that isn't even describing how shallow they really are.
You know, I was a skeptic. These pictures are really cute.
Yeah. They are cute pictures. It was good. Catered by Potbellies. She did get us, the humans, some food.
You know, I joke with you, Sandberg, but I have to be honest with you. I used to do routines about people and their dogs and dressing up their dogs and how silly they talk to dogs. And then I got a German Shepherd as a baby, and I had that dog 15 years. And I was everything that I used to make
fun
of.
That you made fun of, right?
I was, come here, my daddy.
Right, of course.
That's why I don't want the pet, because I don't want to have that connection, because then I'm going to have to lose the connection when they eventually go away.
That's part of it. But the other part for me is walking around and picking up after them. And I think you know what I'm talking about when I say picking up.
Oh, yeah.
Not their toys. Yeah.
I don't remember the comedian, but there was a comedian a long time ago that said something like, if aliens came to Earth and saw us following dogs around to pick up what they leave behind, they wouldn't try to take us over. They'd leave. Yeah. They just leave. They go, these people can't be helped.
But a philosopher once said something, I'm paraphrasing, basically said, if you've never loved an animal, there's a part of your soul that has never been quite awakened.
Well, it's nice.
Yeah, something like that.
It's nice.
It is nice. I'm not that nice, I guess.
No, you've made a personal choice. Woof! All right, so TomDreesen.com.
Tom Dreesen
covers this show's coming up.
September 16th in Barrington, September 23rd in South Holland, Illinois at South Suburban Community College. Right. And you can call those places or go to my website, and all the information is there.
Nice to see you, buddy.
Nice to see you, too. And where's this dog that was going to
hang around. Hang around, Steve Dale.
Just saw him go by.
Coming in?
Yeah.
Well, they're coming in. Hang around. Yeah, hang around. Meet the pooch. coming up in a second. 9:32, big story next, 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Who let the dogs out?
Hoot, 9:43, live on CLTV and on 720 WGN. You know, if I said to you, Norm, Norm's good with strangers, he bonds quickly, you might be thinking about, oh, it's the uncle. He's still active. That's nice. Well, no, this is one of the great named dogs. Norm is a great name for a dog. You know what I mean? Tom Dreesen's here. A dog should have a name like that, right? Like, I got like a dog named Bob.
Well, by the way, our friend David Letterman had a dog named Bob and a dog named Stan and a goldfish named Rita.
It's the best, right? You don't need Spot or Fido. Come on.
Who does that anymore?
Give him a little character.
But this guy is so cute, Norm. What a good-looking guy.
That is a good dog.
A good dog.
That is a very good dog. Steve Dale's here. Steve, you're a good dog.
Thank you.
And this particular critter needs a home.
Yes. So Norm's story can be told best by Maggie from Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control. Maggie?
Nice to meet you, Maggie. How are you?
Great, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Maggie Palumbo. I keep wanting to say Columbo.
Oh, Columbo?
Yeah.
Then she'd walk out of the room and come back in. Just one more thing.
She is kind of a dog detective of sorts.
So how did you get into this business?
I'm a dog lover and started volunteering at the shelter at Chicago Animal Care and Control down at 27th and Western, and then started with Friends, because Friends is a rescue that really is dedicated to helping the animals at the shelter.
You know, it's one of the interesting things to me. You have to love animals to be in this particular business. Yeah. And as much as you love animals, I don't know how you ever give them up. I don't know how you don't have 47 of them at your house.
Probably my husband. I had 5 of them yesterday and this morning.
Right.
Along with a little kid. Yeah.
And you want them all to have great homes, but it's got to be tough to say goodbye.
Managing 5 in the morning when they need to go out and eat, and a kid.
I think it's easier.
Yeah. I know that we'll get a lot more attention somewhere else. So.
All right. So, Tom, you're a visual guy. Describe Norm for people that don't have CLTV on right now.
Norm's a terrier, and he's, How can I say? He's just a sweet-looking dog. When he looks at you, you love him right away, immediately.
He's got a great face.
You know, he has that look in his eye like, would somebody take me home? Could I be your pet? Could I be your family member?
Could I be completely devoted to you, no matter what a creep you might be? No matter how bad a boss you are at work, you come home, I'll be nothing but nice to you. Come on.
Well, that's so gentle.
Norma's, you know what, dogs, what I love about dogs is, you know, a dog, you can be with the dog all day long and then set him outside the door just for 10 seconds. And then open the door again and where have you been? He's all over you. I haven't seen you. A cat, you know, you've been.
That's why dogs don't wear wristwatches.
That's right.
Yeah.
A cat, no concept. You can be gone 6 months, you'll come in the house and the cat's up on the couch licking his paws saying, oh, look who just walked in.
Right. We'll take a memo.
But the dog is all over you. Oh, my God. I haven't seen
him. Cats don't care. Dogs are nothing but love. Well, I can't say that in front of Steve.
Hey, hey. Uh-oh. Well, so I want to go back to Norm a little bit. So Norm was wandering the streets. We never finished that story.
Yeah. So he was wandering the streets at 61st and Normal on the south side right after the storms this past week. So he was a sopping wet mess and cold, and lovely lady took him in and got in touch with us.
No collar, no nothing at all.
He went
no
to
microchip.
Yeah, no microchip.
That's why we need microchips, and also to register with the company if you have a microchip. Norm didn't have any of that, has not been claimed, so now Norm is available for all of you.
Yes.
Adoption. And you can, again, see Norm on CLTV, or just go directly to the Adopt Norm route, which is by doing what? What do we need to do?
You can go to Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control, FCACC.org. You can find us on Facebook as well.
Okay.
So Norm's about 9 pounds. Norm is very soft right now and very, very clean. Norm loves kids. In fact, you have a one-year-old.
Yeah, they're best friends. He will be the saddest one to see him go.
Yeah.
Aww. Yeah, Norm's like a four-legged Nerf ball.
Yeah.
No, he's
but Norm's
toddler.
Still terrier, so at a home, given the chance to adjust for at least a couple of hours. Norm, because Norm is very young. Norm's probably not even two. So Norm will play a lot.
Yep.
And Norm will have opinion about things and let you know about them. But that's not a bad thing.
Yep. But that's the thing. You have a little one.
Yep.
And you have other kids as well?
Nope, just one.
Okay, and Norm's great with a one-year-old.
Great. He loves to get cuddled and petted. My son actually climbed in the cage with him this morning to say good morning.
He's so
but
calm.
No, he's great. And he's really playful, too. My son runs around and tries to get Norm to chase him. Norm's better at playing with a ball, but
I got to say, Norm looks bored with adults. It's probably the kids is what he probably
he's
loves.
Looking out the window right now for the kids to go play with
he's
the kids.
He's looking for a playmate.
But this is also a dog that sounds like it would be pretty well suited for any age, right?
Yeah, and the other nice thing about Norm is that, interesting thing is that Norm is more motivated. I felt bad. I forgot the treats that I always bring because I ran out of the house this morning.
Yeah. Tom and I were hoping on a little snack. Yeah.
I apologize. And Maggie was saying it doesn't much matter. Norm is more motivated by two things. One, by affection.
Uh-huh.
And the other we have still to see, and that is Dave Ennett rolling on the floor with Norm.
I
which
will.
Means,
I will.
Which means the dog will be adopted. Yeah. That is our...
That's a good luck charm.
Yes.
We have a perfect record. We're batting 1,000, but we are afraid to break the routine, and the routine is Dave Ennett rolls around on the floor. By the way,
true.
We don't know where this floor has been. Rolls around on the floor with
Maybe
every
Tom
dog.
Maybe Tom wants to do it.
I don't know about the floor, but I don't know where Dave has been. The floor.
That's what the dogs
point.
Say.
By the way, you don't folks out there, if you adopt Norm, you don't have to call him Norm. That's a name you've given him. If you want to call him Clyde.
Yes. Clyde.
Maybe your ex Clyde.
Or some of the people that Tom knew from the old days. Knuckles. You know.
Two Fingers Lucchese.
Yeah. Paycheck Petey.
One Eye.
Yeah.
Nunzio.
Nunzio.
All right. So we'll keep giving you pictures of Norm's face on TV to make you feel guilty. But let's make sure that you get this done with Norm today. That's one of the... Listen. You've had some winners in here. That's one of the best-looking dogs I've seen.
Yeah,
I know. So
he's a cute,
cute
guy.
Yeah, that's
he
a great
is.
Fish. I got some other questions for Steve. We'll come back with those in just a second on 720 WGN.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that dog is for sale.
You CLTV viewers about to get a treat. You'll be able to watch Dave on the floor with Norm. And if you just turned the radio on, that doesn't mean two guys had too much to drink and they fell. No, Norm is the dog and Dave is the Ennett.
And the doggy will have
so.
There he goes. There they go.
All right. Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control here. Along with Norm wants no part of you?
Norm's not interested.
Why does Norm want no part of you?
I wouldn't take it personally. I think it's Norm's investigating the studio.
Yeah, he's looking out on Michigan Avenue.
Sure.
He's sniffing around.
Is it the cologne?
But I did get a picture of Norm kind of running off away from Dave's arms.
From leaving?
Yeah. Yes.
Again, it's an opportunity for you to have a fabulous dog, and Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control's connection benefit coming up, right?
Yeah, this Sunday, August 13th, we are having a cruise. You bring your dog. Dog Days of Summer.
Yeah.
So chill out on the lake, on the river, sorry, with your dog.
It's Mercury's Skyline Cruise Line, which is right here on the southeast corner.
How do you keep the dog from jumping in the water?
You know, they've been doing the doggy cruises. You know, I began all that.
Yeah.
It began on my show right here.
Yeah, and you jumped in the water the first
time. I did. It's about 10 years ago, and they've been doing it at Mercury Cruise Line for now all that time. It's been such a success that other cities have replicated it. But Holly Agra, the owner there, is just so nice. And she says, you know, a couple times a year I'm going to do a benefit for animals because that's what you care about, Steve. So she is doing one, and that is this coming Sunday. And you can bring your dog is the whole thing.
That's fun.
And so far, they've not lost a dog that's jumped over. So yeah. I don't know why. I'm glad that's not the case.
Yeah, because it's a slow boat, right? Slow boat, and the dog's looking at the water. And
it's kind of like it's an architecture cruise for dogs.
Yeah.
So they point out, you know,
places other famous dogs have pooped.
Yeah. Parks with the most squirrels.
Yeah.
Oldest fire hydrant in the city.
Right. Best treats.
The things that matter to dogs.
Yeah, yeah, all that kind of thing. So it begins at, there's a pre-launch potty.
Potty, get it?
P-A-W-T-Y. Yeah, I got you. I got you. Don't hang too long on that.
I won't. At 11 a.m., and then the K-9 cruise itself begins at noon, but you have to get there about a quarter to 12 for sure, for sure. $35 for adults, and it all benefits Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control. And all day out right by the Riverwalk at where Mercury Skyline Cruise Line is, they will have various adoptable dogs out
cool.
there showing off Chicago's best. So I hope that people participate. It's fun. If it's a beautiful day, there's nothing like going out on the Chicago River and Lake Michigan. And you get to bring your dog with you and help other dogs who need homes.
Well, it's a nice thing you're doing. And please thank everybody else at Friends, too.
Of course.
Thanks. So let me give the website so people can, for further information, it's Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control. That's a long one, right? So
that's fine.
FCACC.org. Yep. Have I got that right?
That is correct.
FCACC.org. I also have a link on my website, stevedale.tv.
All right, we have less than a minute here, and it's not enough to do this fair treatment, but microchipping dogs is a huge, huge deal. For the little ouch it causes the dog for a second, it could save their life, and it could certainly get your dog returned home.
Absolutely.
Best place to do it is to go to your vet?
Yeah. Yes. Your veterinarian can tell you more, and not only to microchip, but to register. To have a microchip without registration is like having a cell phone without a number. Nobody then knows who you are.
Yeah, yeah. So just make sure you get it done. Ask your vet.
Yeah, totally. This dog then would have been returned, presumably to loving owners, I don't know, but Norm now is available for you. We need to adopt this dog out.
A little concerned about the rolling around on the floor thing, but we're hoping for the best. Norm's face should win out. Thank you, guys.